Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Joanne Lowney, with the Wall Street Journal Business News for Wednesday, August 27th, 2025. And here are some headlines for today. Auto and Transport Roundup, Market Talk. Basic Materials Roundup, Market Talk. SpaceX steers Starship to space and deploys test satellites in 10th launch. Cracker Barrel says it's going back to its old logo after backlash. How K-pop Demon Hunters became Netflix's most watched movie ever. Exxon held secret talks with Rosneft about going back to Russia. German consumers feel ever gloomier as economy slumps. Get ready for the end of Fed independence. Australian inflation indicator jumps, backing RBA caution on rate cuts. Lisa Cook, the Fed governor at the center of a firestorm. Our first article today is Auto and Transport Roundup, Market Talk. The latest market talks covering the auto and transport sector, published exclusively on Dow Jones Newswires at 420 ET. MISC could post softer earnings in the coming quarters, TA Securities analyst Lee Yun Leon says in a note. The LNG shipping market is expected to remain soft in 2H, with the influx of new vessels and delays in additional supply from new liquefaction projects. Spot rates for crude tankers will also remain muted due to weaker oil demand from China, as well as output curbs from OPEC. TA Securities maintains a buy rating on the stock and target price of MYR8.40. Shares are up 0.7% at MYR7.52. Amanda Lee at amanda.leewsj.com. Orient Overseas Internationally's 2H earnings performance is likely to be weaker due to declining freight rates amid higher industry uncertainty. UOB Kay Hian's Roy Chen says in a research report, management highlighted factors that could weigh on the company's container shipping market, such as policy uncertainty, new vessel deliveries, and changes in the global economic outlook. Additional port charges by the U.S. on Chinese carriers are also expected to weigh more heavily on the container shipping operators' earnings. The brokerage forecasts the Chinese company's 2H net profit to fall 67% on year. It cuts the stock's rating to sell from hold and the target price to HK$135 from HK$136. $136.40. Shares are 0.5% higher at HK$144. Ronnie Harui, that's Ronnie, R-O-N-N-I-E dot H-A-R-U-I at WSJ.com. Berkshire Hathaway's BNSF Railway won't buy CSX, Chairman Warren Buffett said yesterday, ending long-standing speculation that the rail companies would merge. But that doesn't mean the merger saga in the railroad industry is over, say Raymond James analysts Patrick Taylor Brown and David Hicks. CSX and BNSF could still further deepen our commercial partnership, while both companies will have to decide whether to formally oppose the proposal to deal between the Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern, which could have big implications for the fate of the deal. We believe plenty of M&A theater is still left to play out in the months ahead, Brown and Hicks say. Nicholas Miller at nicholas.miller at wsj.com. Frontier Airlines is targeting Spirit, announcing plans to fly 20 new routes also served by the struggling discounter. Frontier has for years tried to acquire Spirit, its chief budget rival, but has so far been unsuccessful. Now Spirit has hired advisors to explore a repeat restructuring after emerging from bankruptcy this year with lingering financial problems. Frontier CEO Barry Biffle has said Frontier intends to be the last man standing in the low-cost airline space. There's going to be no one that can win in the domestic like us, Biffle said on an earnings call earlier this month. Allison Sider at allison.sider@wsj.com. Airlines could be back on the growth path Wall Street had expected in late 2024, as soon as next month. Melius research analysts say in a note, after a turbulent first half of the year, demand stabilized in June. Bookings rose in July, and that strength has carried into August. Given the improving demand, further restructuring needed at the low end of the fare ladder, and generally low expectations, it is likely time to get a little more offensive within the U.S. airlines, the analysts write, highlighting Delta, United, and Alaska as their top picks. Still, they warn that carriers risk stalling momentum if they ramp up capacity too quickly amid the improving demand environment. Connor Hart at connor.hart@wsj.com. Auto and Transport Roundup Market Talk. The latest market talks covering the auto and transport sector, published exclusively on Dow Jones Newswires at 4:20 ET. Uber's trip growth could get another boost next year if insurance costs continues to rise at a slower clip, TD Cowen analysts say in a note. After a double-digit rise over the past few years, insurance cost growth has slowed amid moderating inflation and policy reforms around fraud and abuse, the analysts say. Uber is positioned for further benefit from changing laws in Georgia and Nevada that have helped reduce insurance exposure, and any policy changes in other key states like California and New Jersey could result in hundreds of millions of dollars in annual savings, the analysts say. Such dynamics would allow them to lower prices for consumers and drive more trip growth, they say. Kelly.Coonan@WSJ.com. Daimler's truck's performance in the U.S. is vital to its midterm targets, Bernstein analysts say in a research note. The German truck and bus maker focused primarily on the promised turnaround of margins in Europe during July's Capital Market Day. However, the 2030 industrial margin target of more than 12% is only achievable if Daimler Truck hits the upper end of the 10% to 14% target for the North American business. The analysts say midterm consensus sits towards the top of the range. Any sustained loss in U.S. market share would be incrementally negative. Shares trade 1.4% higher at €41.22. Nina Kienle at nina.kienle@wsj.com. Geely Automobile may see better earnings in the coming quarters, driven by new models, better product mix, and economies of scale, says HSB Global Research Analysts in a note. They note that the automaker raised its annual sales target for 2025, while most peers lowered their targets. The company, the second largest EV maker in China, will likely sustain strong sales momentum to outgrow its industry rivals. HSB raises its 2025 earnings estimate for the company by 11% on the back of higher sales volume estimates due to a strong new EV car cycle, they add. HSBC Global Research maintains a buy rating for the stock and raises target price to HHK $30 from HHK $26. Shares last at HK $20.44. JIAHUI.HUANG@WSJ.com. The consolidation of China's electric vehicle sector is taking a near-term pause, with the top 10 players holding 77% of the industry's market. HSBC global research analysts write in a note, fast scaling newcomers from the tech space, such as Xiaomi, as well as lower than expected potential industry mergers, are the reasons for slower near-term consolidation, they add. Beijing's push to address overcapacity in the economy has been driving discipline in supply chain and pricing, they note. Given the pressure on auto demand and a possible slowdown in pricing, competition in the coming months, HSB Global Research prefers resilient suppliers such as CATL, Horizon Robotics, and Ningbo Tupo over automakers. Thai Airways' international stock valuation likely has risen too far. Maybank Securities, Thailand's Buniokorn Amaransik, says the analyst cites elevated 15 by 2025 price-to-earnings versus 11 average for Asia-Pacific Airlines. The stock is trading at a demanding valuation significantly beyond the company's fundamentals and downgrades a stock to sell from buy. Also, the company's meeting with analysts had a negative tone, owing to factors including expected delay in aircraft delivery, the analysts say in a note. However, the brokerage raises the target price from THB 10 to THB 12 and 20, based on the 11x average for 2025 price to earnings of APAC Airlines. Shares are 0.7% higher at THB 14.40 by Ronnie Harui. That's Ronnie.harui at wsj.com. Li Auto may face a more challenging sales growth outlook ahead with a less favorable risk-reward profile. Bernstein analysts write in a note, the carmaker sales are being weighed by intensified competition and slowing growth in the industry, they say. Li Auto's L-Series plug-in hybrid pipeline is experiencing declining sales amid aggressive new product launchers from competitors. The company's high-end PHEV segment, which has enjoyed over 100% on-year growth for the past 2 years, is now expected to slow significantly, they add. Bernstein downgrades Li Auto to market perform from outperform and cuts its ADR target to US$26 from US$33. It also trims its H share target to HK$102 from HK$128. Li Auto's H shares are last at HK$93.95 by Jahil Huang. That's jihuang at wsj.com. German consumers feel ever gloomier as economy slumps. Confidence in the economy dropped to its lowest in 6 months by Joshua Kirby. The mood among German consumers continues to darken as the pressures besetting Europe's largest economy take their toll on sentiment. A consumer climate index published Wednesday by research groups GfK and the Nuremberg Institute for Market Decisions worsened for the third month in a row, falling to minus 23.6 in its forecast for September, down 1.9 points in August. Economists polled by the Wall Street Journal had expected the gauge to be stronger at minus 21.5. Consumer sentiment is now definitely in the summer slump, NIM's Rolf Burkel said. Concerns around unemployment drove the gloomier mood among Germans. Growing fears of job losses are causing many consumers to remain cautious, especially when it comes to larger purchases, Burkel said. The decline in sentiment comes after data last week showed the German economy shrank by more than previously estimated in the 3 months through June. Amid that slump, confidence in the economy dropped to its lowest in 6 months, the index showed. Consumers hoped for a recovery of the German economy before the end of this year are likely to have fallen further, GFK said. Rising unemployment, the somewhat bumpy start of the new federal government, and the uncertain customs policy of the U.S. are not currently creating a mood of optimism among consumers. Write to Joshua Kirby at joshua.kirby@wsj.com. Get ready for the end of Fed independence. Markets haven't yet grappled with the implications of the president having control over the central bank. By Greg Ipp. The market response to President Trump's Monday attempt to fire a Federal Reserve governor was relatively subdued. Don't let that fool you. If Trump's effort to remove Lisa Cook for cause succeeds, and perhaps even if it doesn't, this week will go down as one of the most consequential for financial markets in decades. It could mark the end of the Federal Reserve's independence from the White House control, which it effectively obtained in 1951. As a result, inflation is likely to be higher and more volatile than in the decades before 2020. Investors aren't yet pricing in such scenario. In part, that's because the Fed was already preparing to cut rates. On Friday, Chair Jerome Powell indicated that tariffs were unlikely to lead to sustained inflation given a weak labor market, opening the door to a rate cut in September. In the near term, that should boost stock prices and bring down bond yields. More important, investors have no historical template for a politicized Fed and assume its leaders under Trump will behave as they have under previous presidents, setting interest rates according to the economic data and their forecast. Investors would be wiser to assume that starting sometime in the next 9 months, the Fed will set rates according to Trump's preferences. This is the logical conclusion based on the lengths Trump has now shown he will go to gain control of the Fed. In the Federal Bank's 111-year history, no president has tried to remove a governor. As investment bank Evercore ISI said in a note to clients Tuesday, asset markets are not properly priced for what increasingly seems likely to be a rupture in Fed independence. In seeking to remove Cook, Trump cited allegations of mortgage fraud, which are serious. But Cook hadn't even had a chance to respond to the allegations before Trump demanded last Wednesday that she resign. On Monday, he said she was fired, though she hadn't been charged, much less convicted. Cook said Trump has no authority to fire her and would go to court to stop him. Trump's strategy with the Fed, as with tariffs, is like boiling a frog, moving gradually enough to lull markets into thinking nothing of macroeconomic significance has happened. When he announced his steep tariffs in early April, markets revolted, so he walked them back. Then, piece by piece, he restored most of them, and markets took it in stride. Similarly, when he mused about firing Powell last month, markets were roiled. So instead of trying to remove Powell, Trump has looked for a way to accomplish the same thing. If he replaces Cook, he will have appointed 4 of the 7 governors. We'll have a majority very shortly. Once we have a majority, housing is going to swing and it's going to be great, Trump said Tuesday. Trump-appointed governors wouldn't necessarily control the Fed's decisions immediately, because 5 of the 12 members of the rate-setting Federal Open Market Committee are presidents of the Reserve Banks. But the board has authority over those presidents and could force any or all of them out of office by early next year. Removing bank presidents would be an unprecedented violation of norms, but Trump has demonstrated repeatedly he's willing to violate norms. This is a tail risk more than a base case, said economist Peter Williams of investment research firm 22V in a note to clients, but it could have the most impact on policy by potentially removing important dissenting whether formally or just verbally, voices from the FOMC. Once confirmed, Fed governors are in theory free to vote on interest rates as they wish. But by seeking to fire Cook for cause, Trump has signaled that he could do the same for any sitting governor who doesn't vote as he prefers on interest rates. If courts rule the president gets to define cause, it would nullify the protection the Supreme Court said federal governors have. Even if Trump loses, he may well try again, and his next target might choose to change his vote or quit rather than fight. Trump has also gone to much greater lengths now than in his first term to ensure that his appointees are loyal. Typically, candidates for the Fed, like candidates for federal judgeships, don't preview how they will rule once in office. That convention has gone out the window. Trump's Fed candidates have generally said they think rates should go down, even though inflation at around 3% is still above the Fed's 2% target. Last September, while Joe Biden was still president, Stephen Moran, then an investment fund strategist, said it was a mistake for the Fed to cut rates with underlying inflation between 2.5% and 3%. Now chairman of Trump's Council of Economic Advisers and a candidate for a spot on the Fed, and with rates a full point lower and underlying inflation the same, he has echoed Trump's criticism that the Fed has been slow to lower rates. He argues Trump's policies will deliver lower inflation. Last week, David Malpass, a former president of the World Bank, who is also under consideration for a spot, wrote in the Journal that the Fed should cut interest rates and anchor itself in forward-looking, market-based data with the goal of defending the dollar. But the dollar has fallen steadily this year, which in Malpass's framework would typically be an argument against cutting rates. In the short term, inflation will be determined by economic conditions, not the makeup of the Fed. Right now, inflation-protected Treasury bonds see a bump in inflation in the coming year because of tariffs, then returning close to the Fed's target. Markets aren't good at pricing in structural shifts from the economy. They didn't anticipate the high inflation of the 1970s, its collapse in the 1980s, under then-chairman Paul Volcker, the housing and mortgage crisis of 2007-09, or the pandemic inflation of 2021-22. An investor can lose a lot of money betting on something that happens so rarely. Still, investors might want to prepare for a coming structural shift in inflation. Williams of 22V ticked off the major macroeconomic policies now at work, the highest tariffs since the Great Depression, stimulative fiscal policy, a stagnant labor force, and sustained assaults on the independence of the Fed. It seems like an environment just right for above-target inflation. Write to Greg Ipp at greg.ipp@wsj.com. Firing Powell would shatter the economy's inflation defenses. Without independence, the Fed couldn't be trusted to give priority to low inflation over the president's other priorities, by Greg Ipp. The U.S. has endured a series of inflationary shocks the past few years: pandemic disruptions, massive fiscal stimulus, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, an immigration clampdown, tariffs, and soaring projections of national debt. Yet throughout, investors have expected that in a few years' time, inflation will be around 2%. The reason is that they instinctively assume that no matter the shock, the Federal Reserve is there to keep inflation low, like the brakes on a car. If President Trump succeeds in enforcing out Federal Chair Jerome Powell, that assumption will be shattered. The Fed would no longer be an independent check on the government, but just another part of that government with inflation subordinated to other priorities, such as the cost of the national debt. What would happen then? Markets wouldn't like it, though predictions of a crash look overwrought. Stocks have hit records while discounting some possibility of Trump removing Powell. The lag between monetary policy and inflation is long and variable. The real consequences of subservient Fed would show up gradually. Once inflation pressures emerge from the Fed, fearful of crossing the president, fails to act. Investors and the public would no longer assume low inflation will prevail in the long run. And because expectations are self-fulfilling, inflation itself would grind higher. This past week, Kevin Warsh, a former Fed governor under consideration to succeed Powell, confidently declared the Fed's next chair will be independent. Independence in the conduct of monetary policy is essential, another contender, Trump advisor Kevin Hassett, said. Everybody at the White House understands the independence of the Fed is super important. But whether the Fed is independent isn't up to the next chair. If Trump can fire Powell, he can also fire his successor. In May, the Supreme Court indicated that the president cannot remove a Fed governor, including the chairman, except for cause. Trump said Wednesday that he wasn't likely to fire Powell, but left open the possibility that Powell might have to leave for fraud. Trump officials appear to be trying to establish a cause for firing Powell based on expensive renovations at the Fed's headquarters. Trump's concern over building projects' costs is selective. Take his wall on the southern border. During the 2016 election campaign, he said it would cost $8 billion to $12 billion, and Mexico would pay. Trump ultimately got $17 billion from taxpayers in his first term for the project, according to the Department of Homeland Security. It wasn't finished, and Mexico didn't pay. Republicans in Congress have just allocated an additional $46.5 billion to complete the job. So the Fed's building is simply a pretext for what Trump really wants, replacing Powell with someone who will lower interest rates. If Trump succeeds in forcing Powell out over the building, he will assume he can find a reason to remove any Fed chair. To be sure, the chair has only one vote on the rate-setting Federal Open Market Committee, composed of 7 governors and 5 of 12 Reserve Bank presidents. Still, if Trump can replace Powell, he can replace other governors with loyalists, who can then remove uncooperative Reserve Bank presidents. Advisors such as White House Budget Director Russ Voigt have long felt monetary policy should be under the president's control. Whether Powell is forced out or finishes his term in May, his successor will be damaged goods. Analysts at the investment bank Piper Sandler wrote this past week, no matter who gets the job, markets will have doubts about his independence, they added. The politicization of the Fed we are witnessing is a monumental development. Cynics might say the Fed has never been truly independent. Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, and Ronald Reagan at various times pressured the Fed to keep rates low. But unlike Trump, they did so mostly behind closed doors, knowing the appearance of independence mattered. Even so, Fed acquiescence to that pressure helped drive up inflation in the 1960s and 1970s. From 1993 until now, presidents avoided interfering with monetary policy, and inflation fell to around 2% and stayed there until 2021. Critics call inflation surge to over 7% in 2021-22 proof the supposedly independent Fed was a failure. In fact, the pandemic's disruptions to supply chains and labor markets made some inflation inevitable. Powell, like most everyone, failed to foresee how these disruptions, colliding with stimulus-fueled demand, would fuel inflation. Once he clued in, he jacked rates up sharply, practically inviting a recession. Remarkably, inflation came back down without a recession because once supply and demand returned to normal, so did wage and price setting. Workers and companies never acted as if high inflation was here to stay. This was a victory, not a failure, for the post-1993 monetary regime. The victory isn't complete. Underlying inflation by the Fed's preferred gauge is around 2.7%, above the Fed's 2% target. On Thursday, Fed Governor Chris Waller, another potential Powell successor, said it was close to 2% after excluding tariff effects. What would happen if Powell were fired? In May, Goldman Sachs economists looked at unscheduled leadership changes in central banks around the world and found inflation was 1 to 2 percentage points higher 2 years later with no benefit to growth. Such removals are more common in emerging than developed markets. In 2021, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan replaced the central bank governor with a loyalist who cut interest rates with inflation already at 15%. The currency plunged and inflation rocketed to 85% the next year. The U.S. isn't Turkey. Its financial system is the world's most trusted, in great part because of the Fed. But there are hints that trust is eroding, such as a falling dollar and rising gold price. More ominously, market inflation expectations are edging up. Based on inflation-protected bonds, the expected inflation rate in 3 to 4 years after tariff effects have washed out has risen from 2.15% at the end of June to 2.36%, according to interest rate strategies at J.P. Morgan Chase. That probably reflects concerns about Powell's removal. The likeliest path for inflation in the near term is down, thanks to a slack labor market holding down wage pressures. It's when economy heats up and price pressures emerge that the central bank's freedom to set interest rates, no matter the president's preferences, will have consequences. And we won't know the brakes have failed until it is time to stop the car. Write to Greg Ipp at greg.ipp@wsj.com. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Joanne Lowney. If you miss any part of this program, you can get it on demand on our website, sunsounds.org. Then click on our broadcast info and audio. You can take SunSounds with you. Get our stream and on demand on our new SunSounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. And you can hear SunSounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Now back to the next article. Canada factory wholesale sales look to build on recovery in July. An advanced tally of manufacturing sales points to a solid 1.8% improvement in trade in July from the month prior. By Rob M. Stewart. Ottawa. Canada's manufacturers and wholesalers look to be steadying after taking a hit this year from trade uncertainty and higher tariffs, with early estimates of sales suggesting a tailwind for a sluggish economy entering the third quarter. In advance, tally of manufacturing sales points to a solid 1.8% improvement in trade in July from the month prior, while wholesale sales are estimated to have risen 1.3% for the month. Data released Tuesday by Statistics Canada showed. The advance in factory sales was led by improved trade in transportation equipment, as well as in petroleum and coal, the data agency said. The improvement for the wholesale industry reflected higher sales by the motor vehicle and parts and accessories industry. Trade-exposed sectors of Canada's economy have faced the brunt of the fallout from the abrupt shift in the U.S. approach to trade and frequently changing import tariffs. Though there have been some signs of stability returning, and recent polls indicate business and household confidence is improving from record lows in spring. Factory sales rose 0.3% in June, following 4 consecutive months of declines, led higher by trade in petroleum and food products, Statistics Canada reported earlier this month. Over the second quarter of the year, sales slumped 4.6%. The largest quarterly drop since the same period of 2020. Wholesalers, the largest component of Canada's service sector, saw a 0.7% rise in sales between May and June, the first increase in 4 months, thanks to activity in the food sector and the mineral, ore, and precious metals industries. For the second quarter in the year, wholesale sales were down 1.7%. Statistics Canada is set to release an estimate of industry-level gross domestic product for July at the end of the week, alongside GDP data for June and the second quarter. The agency last month forecast GDP edged up 0.1% from the month before in June after falling 0.1% in both May and April. Economists anticipate an analyzed contraction of 0.7% for the first quarter, a sharp slowdown for the economy after stronger-than-expected growth of 2.2% in the first 3 months of 2025. The changes in U.S. trade policies have created heightened economic uncertainty that is affecting both the U.S. and Canada. Bank of Montreal, in its quarterly report to shareholders on Tuesday, said that uncertainty and reciprocal tariffs will likely cause the global economy to weaken this year. The recent U.S. trade agreements with the several regions, including the European Union and Japan, mark some progress towards stabilizing the economic environment. It forecast a modest contraction in Canada's economy in the second quarter due to weakness in exports and business investment, with real GDP growth averaging 1.3% for the year and 1.4% in 2026 versus the 1.6% expansion in 2024. S&P Global's monthly manufacturing purchasing manager survey found a modest improvement for July, though its headline index remained in contraction territory for a sixth straight month, as trade with the U.S. remained challenging. Output, new orders, and buying activity continued to weaken, though the pace of the decline has slowed. Statistics Canada's sales projection for July was based on a weighted response rate to its monthly survey of roughly 70% and the wholesale estimate on a response rate of about 64%. Official sales data for both indicators is scheduled to be released September 15. Write to Rob M. Stewart at rob.stewart@wsj.com. Punishing droughts put fresh pressure on meat and dairy production. Investors are calling for farm-based businesses to address increasing concerns about their water use, by Clara Hudson. Investors have an unexpected worry: access to water. Droughts have hit countries around the globe, from Spain to Syria this year, and parts of the U.S., including farm-heavy North Carolina. Worries about increasingly high temperatures have investors wondering how farming businesses are dealing with water shortages. Meat and dairy farms rely on water to hydrate their animals, grow crops to feed them, and even to cool them off in extreme heat. Two-thirds of livestock companies surveyed by an investor group aren't properly managing potential water shortages, indicating widespread failure to manage water-related risks effectively, according to a report published on Tuesday. The report by the Farm Animal Investment Risk and Return Initiative, a global investor network representing $80 trillion in assets, analyzed water risk for 60 large global meat, dairy, and aquaculture companies. The FAIRR initiative provides investors with research on risk to the animal agricultural industry. The growing appetite for water-intensive agricultural products is threatening not only ecosystems and communities, but also the long-term stability of agri-food markets and investor returns, the report said. Investors need to know how companies are planning to secure water in regions where droughts are rife, the report said. But 44 of the meat, dairy, and agriculture businesses surveyed didn't provide any such data, according to the report, with only 10 setting targets to reduce their exposure to water insecurity. Only one company, Vital Farms, a U.S.-based egg and dairy product producer, disclosed where it gets its water from. FAIRR has partnered with other investor organizations to push fast food companies, including Chipotle and Wendy's, to divulge any plans on reducing their water consumption, too. Water insecurity is causing uncertainty in supply chains and driving down crop yields, the report says, also emphasizing that the level of water risk depends on geography. For example, India and the U.S. are particularly water-stressed regions. Demand for fresh water is set to exceed supply by 40% in 2030, according to the Global Commission on the Economics of Water, a group set up by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Water risk is no longer a distant environmental concern. It's a material financial issue that will shape markets over the next decade, said Sudip Hazra, director of the First Senator MUFG Sustainable Investment Institute, which conducts environmental, social, and corporate governance research. The issue is getting political, too. Texas farmers pushed President Trump to pressure Mexico into providing water amid a drought earlier this year, leading him to threaten Mexico with tariffs. The U.S. and Mexico share water from the Rio Grande and the Colorado River, an agreement which has been in effect since the mid-1940s. The American Farm Bureau Federation says on its website that farmers can reduce water use by up to 40% by getting moisture directly to each plant through a drip irrigation. The group said it's also hopeful about advances in humidity sensing technology that helps farmers gauge how much water each crop needs down to the drop. Water use concerns have also risen as big tech guzzles water to cool data centers that power artificial intelligence. Just as big tech, and especially artificial intelligence, faces scrutiny over their water use, a handful of highly developed agri-food companies hold outsized influence on building water resilience, said Henry Thropp, research manager at FAIRR. Droughts can drive up costs because without enough water, businesses have to buy more feed instead of relying on grazing lands, said Karina Schoengold, a professor of agricultural economics at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. It is important to consider not only the water that the animals consume, but also the water used to grow animal food, she said. Write to Clara Hudson at clara.hudson@wsj.com. Putin returns to Moscow with air of triumph after summit. Meeting with Trump helped give Kremlin leader much of what he wanted, including putting Russia on equal footage with the U.S. By Thomas Grove. Anchorage, Alaska, Russian President Vladimir Putin couldn't have scripted his first visit to the U.S. since 2015 much better. The Russian leader strutted along a red carpet at a U.S. airbase and posed smiling with President Trump, who had weeks earlier been expressing mounting frustration with him and threatening to hit Russia and its trading partners with sanctions. He met with Trump under the sign that read, Pursuing Peace. When they emerged 3.5 hours later, their leaders said they hadn't reached a deal. Instead, Putin used the stage to press his demands on Ukraine. Neither Trump nor Putin, who is facing an international arrest warrant for war crimes, took questions from the U.S. press. Putin, by clinching a long-awaited summit with Trump, scored a win. The Kremlin leader has staked his legacy on dismantling the post-Cold War world order and resurrecting Russia's great power status to put it on par with the U.S. Putin achieved exactly what he wanted. He simultaneously preserved his relationship with Trump, avoided additional sanctions, and received the blessing to continue his war, said Andrei Kolesnikov, a Moscow-based political analyst and a columnist at New Times, an independent Russian-language magazine. The summit gave Putin a platform to turn long-standing narratives about the Ukraine war on their head emphasizing that the U.S. and Russia are neighbors separated at their closest point by just over 2 miles of water. Meanwhile, he has tried to paint Europe and Ukraine as the two biggest obstacles to peace, while stepping up recent attacks on Ukrainian cities. Trump spoke to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and European leaders in the days before the summit to understand better their red lines in negotiations with Russia, but the images of the two leaders in Alaska were certainly unsettling on the continent. Trump rolled out a red carpet for Putin on the taxiway of a U.S. airbase, applauding as the Kremlin leader approached. After a firm handshake, Trump invited him to ride in his armored limousine to the meeting. Putin loves trolling and rubbing Europeans' noses in the fact that there is a strong relationship with Trump, said Andrew Weiss, who worked on Russian affairs in George H.W. Bush's and Bill Clinton's administrations, and is vice president for studies at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a think tank based in Washington, D.C. Hours after arriving back in Moscow, Putin gathered his top officials inside the Kremlin to tell them the summit had been a resounding success. "We have not had direct negotiations of this kind at this level for a long time," he said, to an array of officials, including the defense minister, the chief of staff, and intelligence chiefs. "I repeat once again, we had the opportunity to calmly and in detail once again explain our position." To be sure, Trump said in the days before the summit that he didn't expect any major breakthroughs and said he hoped he could clinch a ceasefire and lay the foundation for a lasting peace process. But in the hours after the summit, previous calls for an immediate ceasefire evaporated. Meanwhile, Trump's own language mirrored that of the Russian side, calling in a post to Truth Social for an overarching peace agreement as opposed to a halt in fighting first. That effectively gives Putin the green light to continue the fighting to capture more land in eastern Ukraine, where Russian troops are making gains. "The president of our great country showed Trump, the president of another great country, that Russia is party to be reckoned with," said Alexander Dugin, a far-right politician and pro-Putin ideologue. "Therefore, we cannot be forced to do things that anyone wants, be it the West or Trump." Putin, who has called the fall of the Soviet Union a geopolitical catastrophe, has been working to resurrect slowly Moscow's sphere of influence in parts of the territory that once encompassed the Soviet Union. Ukraine occupies a special place in Russian history. The founding dynasty of the Russian Empire had roots there. He is unlikely to sacrifice his ambition to reclaim Ukraine as a part of Russia to improve relations with Washington. But it would be a coup for the Russian leader if he could accomplish both after years of Western isolation sparked by his invasion. Both sides want normalization, which has a very strong business aspect that could unlock some money flows for both countries, said Elena Rybkova, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Putin seemed to signal as much on Friday when he signed a decree that would offer ExxonMobil re-entry into the Russian market through a stake in the potentially lucrative Sakhalin 1 oil field, which it pulled out of after Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022. Whether the takeaways from the summit can translate into a sustainable peace process is hard to determine. In a call from Air Force One on his way home from the summit, Trump relayed to the Europeans the outcome of the meeting and that Putin wanted to keep fighting, according to European officials. Trump plans to meet Monday with Zelensky, who wasn't invited to Friday's summit. Analysts said expectations are low that a road to peace can be found in a war that Russia is slowly winning. The bubble of inflated expectations has burst, and the process itself has turned into waiting for Godot, said Kolesnikov, referring to a play about endless waiting. Write to Thomas Grove at thomas.grove@wsj.com. Here is an opinion article by the editorial board. What if Trump runs the Federal Reserve? His firing of Lisa Cook shows he wants to put monetary policy under his personal control. He may succeed, but the country will live to regret it. President Trump has long wanted to control the Federal Reserve, and on Monday night he made his power play by firing Fed Governor Lisa Cook. A central bank with even a semblance of independence may be the casualty. Mr. Trump has resisted his itch to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell on the savvy advice that he could rattle markets and trigger an extended court battle. But Ms. Cook said Tuesday she'd challenge her removal, so Mr. Trump will still get his legal fight in what could be a landmark case. The Cook firing is a calculated putsch. Federal Housing Finance Agency Director Bill Pulte teed up the dismissal last week when he posted a criminal referral for Ms. Cook on social media. He said she may have committed mortgage fraud by claiming two different homes as primary residences on mortgage applications in 2021, which may have enabled her to get favorable loan terms. Initially, misrepresenting information on a mortgage application is wrong and a federal crime, but we haven't seen the details or Ms. Cook's explanation. There's also a question of selective prosecution, since Mr. Pulte's crackdown on mortgage fraud seems to be aimed only at Mr. Trump's opponents. Ms. Cook deserves more due process than a presidential declaration of guilt on Truth Social. The criminal referral is a threat to other Fed governors. Cut rates or else. It's also a pretext to fire Ms. Cook for cause. The referral, Ms. Trump wrote to Ms. Cook, provides sufficient reason to believe she exhibits the sort of gross negligence in financial transactions that calls into question your competence and trustworthiness as a financial regulator. Federal law lets a president remove Fed governors for cause, but it doesn't clearly define the term. Some statutes that provide removal protections for heads of other agencies define for cause as wrongdoing in office. The Federal Trade Commission Act mentions inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance in office. Ms. Cook may argue that the president can't remove her for wrongdoing she committed before becoming a governor. In any case, hasn't been proven. If the president gets his way with firing her, then the for-cause protections could become toothless. The Justice Department may argue that for-cause restrictions in the president's removal power for governors violate the separation of powers because such officials exercise executive power. This is the argument that the administration has used to remove members of other so-called independent agencies. A majority of the Supreme Court this spring let the president remove National Labor Relations Board and Merit Systems Protection Board members, Trump versus Wilcox, but its unsigned opinion said its decision didn't necessarily implicate removal protections for Fed governors and other members of the Federal Open Market Committee, FOMC. The Federal Reserve is a uniquely structured, quasi-private entity that follows the distinct historical tradition of the first and second banks of the United States, the opinion said, though that aside lacks the power or precedent. There are good arguments on both sides of this constitutional question that is likely to reach the high court. But if Mr. Trump prevails, he will essentially control the FOMC because he will then be able to fire other board members at will, and the board can fire Fed regulation bank presidents on the committee. This will please the constitutional purists who think the Fed shouldn't be independent of presidential power. Yet this isn't a prudent fight for Mr. Trump to pick, and it isn't in the best interests of the country. We know from history what happens to central banks that become arms of politicians. See inflation in Turkey under President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and in Argentina for decades. Richard Nixon jawboned that Chair Arthur Burns to keep monetary policy easy, and the result was the 1970s great inflation. Mr. Trump doesn't even need this legal brawl because he's already getting his way with interest rates. Mr. Powell signaled as much Friday in his Jackson Hole speech. The Fed has made many policy mistakes, not least being too late to raise rates when inflation heated up during the pandemic, and this is one reason it is politically vulnerable to Mr. Trump's attack. But if he wants to change the Fed, Mr. Trump has ample opportunity through appointments to the board, including a successor for Mr. Powell as chair next year. That doesn't seem to be enough for Mr. Trump, who thinks he can run monetary policy. Has he considered what a politically malleable Fed might do when the progressive left takes charge under another president? Of course he hasn't. Mr. Trump is all about short-term tactics and personal political advantage. Institutional integrity bores him. But if he succeeds in taking over the Fed, he and Republicans will own the results and whatever inflation returns. Notable and quotable crime in Chicago. Yes, 192 is still 192 dead people. No one celebrates that, but overall, Chicago is hardly out of control. Michael Tomasky, writing for the New Republic, August 25th. First, let's state some numbers. Crime in Chicago, like crime in nearly every other major city, is down. Through the first half of 2025, the homicide rate is down 33%. There were 289 murders in the first half of 2024 and 192 in the first half of this year. Yes, 192 is still 192 dead people. No one celebrates that. But a 33% decrease? That is real, too, and really good. Overall, crime complaints are down 14% as well. Certain categories of theft are up since the pandemic, but overall, Chicago is hardly out of control. It's been sickening to watch Trump tell lie after lie about the city he lives in most of the time, but clearly knows nothing about. Yes, Washington went a week without a homicide since Trump's National Guard deployment. Good, great even, but he talked about that as if it had never happened before. That's the first time in anybody's memory that you haven't had a murder in a week, he said. Well, that's true. For people whose memories go back only to mid-May, if your memory goes back any further than that, like all the way back to January 1st, say, then you might recall that this was the fifth week this year without a homicide. The others include February 25th to March 4th, March 5th to March 12th. Yep, that was 2 weeks in a row. April 11th to 18th, and May 4th through 11th. But the right-wing media repeat Trump's garbage, and his idiot backers believe it. That brings us to the end of today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Joanne Lowney, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more interesting programs on Sun Sounds.